Attention, patriots. Broadcasting from the Free Zones, Radio Free Redoubt begins in 5, 4, 3, 2.
Welcome and good evening, God-fearing, liberty-loving American Christian patriots and patriots abroad as well. This is Radio Free Redoubt, the voice of the American Redoubt Patriot-held territory. This week, we've got something special that was planned for actually last week, and we had some technical difficulties just before the show was supposed to begin streaming. So we were hoping to be able to just record that and upload that Monday, but Simon Roche from Sightlanders was traveling, and so it's just been a hit and miss trying to get caught up, but we finally did. So tonight, the interview with Simon Roche from Sightlanders in South Africa. Sightlanders is the largest in the world civil defense organization. It covers the entire country of South Africa. And as you know, they are in serious trouble down there. Calls for ethnic cleansing against the whites that have lived there for generations. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to kind of get his take on generally what's going on in the world, what's going on in South Africa, and then some insight as to what Sightlanders is, or Sightlanders. And I'm going to get to that in just a moment. But I have an announcement to make. Did this come up quick. But Young Partisans, it's that time of year again where we will be giving away another custom engraved Red Ryder lever action range model air rifle from the Daisy Museum. So this year's 2023 Christmas one-time pad contest will be taking place beginning this week. You'll have the opportunity to practice, and then the numbers, the secret coded message, will be put out on next Sunday's Radio Free Redoubt podcast. So sharpen your pencils. Check the website, radiofreeredoubt.com. By Monday evening, we will have the full page for getting involved, for practicing, and all of the instructions will be uploaded Monday evening. Our partisan crew is working on that, posting content right now and through tomorrow morning. So tomorrow evening, check that. Now, this year we have a special edition because popular demand. Adults have been saying, we love doing the one-time pad thing too, and we do it anyway, even though we don't get a prize, but maybe we could do something for the adults. Well, we do. We had actually a patriot had a custom engraved Red Ryder BB gun, custom engraved. This is a Bravo 6.5 commemorative Red Ryder Daisy BB gun, custom engraved and sent to us by the patriots that wanted to keep Bravo 6.5. He's one of our longtime, from the beginning, Amron Corps operators who passed away. I would say he was murdered by COVID-19 and mistreatment, but that's my opinion. Anyway, served Amron honorably for many years, very well respected and loved by many of us, and it was sad to see him go. So we have a Bravo 6.5 commemorative Red Ryder BB gun for the adults. So more information on that, and this will be an opportunity for you guys to participate. Monday evening, December 4th, for the full information. And practice this week so you'll be ready to decode the message that will be put out next Sunday, December 10th. on Radio Free Redoubt. You'll have 1 week to break the code and email me. The instructions will be on the pay, on the posting. And the winner will be drawn and announced on December 17th, the following Sunday. So this will allow our partisan team to get the Red Rider boxed up and shipped off to the winner by hopefully Monday, December 18th. So you should be able to have it by Christmas. So without further ado, let's get to this interview with Simon Roche from Sightlanders, South Africa. Very interesting discussion, and I've been looking forward to sharing this with you for a while. And he's in country here for about another week or two. So we're great to have him with us. Simon Roche, Sightlanders. All right. In this segment here, I've been looking forward to this for a long time. We have a special guest with us this evening. And many of you who've been longtime listeners are fully aware of the Civil Defense Preparedness Organization, Sightlanders, or Southlanders, but in Afrikaans, it's Sightlanders. And it is a nationwide, the most comprehensive, largest, most organized civil defense mutual assistance group in the world. And I have Simon Roche, who is the international relations, kind of a foreign advocacy for Sightlanders. He's in country right now in the U.S., and it's always just a fascinating person to talk to and just a blessing to be able to sit down and touch bases again. So it's a great pleasure to once again introduce for our new listeners. I think you're really going to enjoy this discussion, but Simon Roche, welcome to Radio Free Redoubt.
Thank you very much for having Sightlanders on your show, John Jacob. I've got a broad grin on my face. It's a genuine pleasure to be interviewed by you and to be able to talk to the people of the American Redoubt, or the Great American Redoubt, as I insist on calling it when I tell people about it.
Yes. Now, your first trip here, well, the first time I got to meet you was in 2017, and you were doing a tour outside of South Africa, and you spent a considerable amount of time in the United States creating awareness about the plight that the white citizens, I'm drawing a blank here, the Boer, you've got British and Dutch descent in South Africa. Is that correct?
Well, broadly speaking, we have the Afrikaner Boer people who are of Dutch, German, and French descent, all mingled in. And then we have the English speakers of South Africa. My people are Irish. We have a small Italian community that speaks English, a Maronite Lebanese community, Catholic Lebanese people, Greeks and others, but mostly English, of English descent, of British descent, I should say. We're about 60-40. We're about 4.5 million white people in South Africa, of which about 60% are the Afrikaner Boers, and 40% are English speakers of different sorts.
Okay, and things, for those paying attention, things are getting very precarious in South Africa since the communists essentially have taken over the majority of the government. Several things have degraded public services, safety, security. There's an immense amount of corruption in the government, from police all the way up to your legislature, your executive branch, and everything in between. And the reason why this is really important, and we'll talk about what Sightlanders is and why Sightlanders, and that is the call for violence specifically against an ethnic minority. And so this is kind of a polar opposite of what we think of when we think of, you know, ethnic oppression, because the whites make up just under 10% of the population in South Africa. And now there are calls, open calls for violence, killing whites, hunting them down and eradicating them specifically because of their ethnicity. So let's go back to that and talk about what Sidelanters is and what is the whole premise behind the organization Sidelanters and what you're trying to accomplish.
Well, it's interesting that you mention communist. The world media has not told the truth about South Africa. And our leader and founder, Mr. Gustav Müller, recognized about 30 years ago, you know, just at the time of the changeover from apartheid to multiracial democracy, that there were a whole lot of lies built into the new South Africa narrative. And one of those was the communist thing. It's over time, it's come out. The African National Congress is 100% dyed in the wool, committed to the execution of what they call a national democratic revolution, yes, which to you and me is a Leninist revolution.
Yes.
So with that in mind, he said, look, to himself, look, this is not going to go well. I need to figure out a way. When it does end badly, I can do the best for the welfare of my people. And he came across the provisions or the Geneva Conventions and the protocols additional to the Geneva Conventions, which make specific provision for what they call identifiable ethnic groups to prepare in a legal, decent, respectable manner, no chemical, nuclear, biological weapons, no nonsense like that, for an anticipated conflict with other ethnic groups. So the same might have applied to the Croats in the breakup of Yugoslavia.
Yes.
The same might have applied to the Watutsi people, the Tutsi people in Rwanda. The same might have applied to Jews in Warsaw ghettos. So he said, right, we're this tiny little minority. These guys are telling enormous lies. There's a false predicate to the new South Africa. I think it's going to go very badly in the end. I'm going to set up an organization called Sidelanders that seeks to safeguard the welfare of non-combatant civilians, of my people, in the event of this thing that you've just mentioned, namely senior leaders in South Africa talking about the slaughter of all whites. And as our president said recently, if the African National Congress loses next year's general election, the youth of the African National Congress must rise up and effect a proper revolution. In other words, a violent, bloody struggle.
Yes.
To ensure that the African National Congress can retain power even if it loses it at the polling booth. So I think you have everything there in a nutshell. What is Sidelanders? How were we founded? What is our purpose? What is the threat? And so on, John Jacob.
You know, when I first learned about this several years ago, one thing that has kind of shocked people in the West is that this is a white-only organization. And specifically because it's an ethnic minority group that is being targeted. You know, much like, say, Jews in Warsaw Ghetto appealing using international law to protect an ethnic minority group that is being targeted for persecution. You know, to say, well, I'm not Jewish, I'm Italian, but can I join your group? Well, this is a Jewish organization, you know, that's appealing nationally because our ethnic group has been targeted. So this is the same thing in South Africa. It's not a white supremacy issue or neo-Nazi movement or anything like that, which really kind of confounds the legacy media on the left. They're not sure what to make of this, but it is not a white supremacy type of movement at all. This is an appeal for international attention to a targeted group of ethnic minorities.
Yeah, absolutely. It's easy to misconstrue these things. It's easy for me to say that the reason that you, John Jacob, punched the man is because he's black. When in fact, you want to make the counter, well, it's got nothing to do with the fact that he's black. I punched him because he punched me twice 5 minutes ago. You know, the race is not the explanation for every single thing that occurs under the sun.
Right.
And the reason why Zuidlanders has founded itself under those laws that make provision for identifiable ethnic groups to prepare for a conflict is because in South Africa, when you're a minority of about 8%, and the majority says, well, we one day we're going to talk about slaughtering all whites, then you know that it is reasonable that there may be a threat to your person. So you don't do it out of some sort of a white supremacy or anything like that. You do it because somebody else has said, we may exterminate all of these people, that time may come. And you have senior leaders singing songs like kill the farmer, kill the boer. And as the king of the Amazizi people in South Africa, South Africa's oldest black, in other words, non-Aboriginal, we're not talking now about the ancient races, we're talking about the the black people, as you know, black people, who came much later. The oldest of the black tribes, the Amazizi people, as the king said to me, Simon, in white people's idiom, he's a very well-spoken man, by the way, said to me, Simon, in white people's idiom, a wife can say to her husband, oh, I hate you, and it means nothing. If in black idiom, a wife says to a husband, or a husband says to a wife, or a husband says, a man says to his boss, or a brother says to another brother, I hate you, it means only that. He said, a wife in white idiom could even say to her husband, I could kill you right now. And he might laugh at her, and she might laugh about it half an hour later. He said that idiom does not exist in black African languages. So he said, when our leaders sing, kill the farmer, kill the boer. In other words, kill the farmers, which is a metaphor for white people, and kill the boers, which again is a metaphor for white people. So it's like saying, kill the whites, kill the whites. He said, when people sing that in this country, leaders, he said, what we as black people hear is nothing allegorical, nothing metaphorical. We hear that we should be preparing to rise up to slaughter you. He said, that's just the way that it is. And he said, you should learn from what I'm telling you now, because I'm cautioning you that one day it is going to come. So, you know, people can take it or leave it, but really this is not about white supremacy at all.
Okay, so now we understand really the truth about the threat that you guys face. We see crime with these attacks on farms, the killing, rape, and torture of white families on farms, trying to drive them off their land that's been in their land for generations and generations. This is not stolen land. This is settled land in a land that had no population of any kind when they arrived. I'm talking about the Dutch, the Boer. But now at the federal level, at the government level, they're actually trying to codify this, to take land away from whites because of their ethnicity without compensation, and redistributing that land to black farm owners. And so right back again, this is dealing with an ethnic minority that, you know, that's being targeted. So you're appealing using the Geneva Conventions, international law, for intercession there, and, you know, to an appeal for, awareness and intervention, if possible. But Some people have asked, and I think you guys have brilliantly responded to this, but when this topic comes up, most responses are, why don't you just leave?
I don't know. Why don't you just leave? There's no good reason for me to leave the country of my birth, the country of my father, the country of my mother, the country that I love. I've not stolen or taken anything from anybody. Any of your listeners who has the faintest understanding of the demographic, the true, nothing you will read in the Washington Post or the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times, the true demographics of South Africa knows that, and this has been, by the way, very well written about by some very good American authors too, knows that that there were only about somewhere between 1 and 2 million of all black and Aboriginal people in South Africa in a country of, I don't know how much it is in square miles, but 1.2 million square kilometers during the time that the whites went into the hinterland, into what later became the heartland on the great trek of the 1830s. And so what land are you going to take? Are you going to take land that's defended by a black tribe, or are you going to take land that's unoccupied? Whites settled unoccupied land for the most part. I'm not saying that there was no conflict or that there was no land that was taken. But to give you some idea, just the land owned by the Zulus during apartheid, by the Zulu Kingdom, during apartheid, during evil, evil, terrible, bad, ugly, nasty, horrible apartheid, was 32% in that region, in the region of their homeland. That excluded all black townships, all black privately owned farms, and all black suburbs. I'm not saying it was equitable. What I'm saying is, I bet you that there are very few people who are listening to this podcast right now who knew that right through apartheid, the occupation of land in my home province, the province of the Zulus, was 50%. I think if you walk down a street in the United States now with a microphone, as you see those videos on YouTube, and you ask people, suck out of your thumb, how much of the land did black people occupy, the black majority occupied during nasty, horrible apartheid? And people will say 1% or 0% or 5% or 10% or whatever. Nobody's going to say, well, it was well over 50%. In fact, did you know that just the Zulu Kingdom's own land during apartheid was 32%? So the reality is that it's very badly misrepresented. And now we've just had completed a 19-year-long process to address every single outstanding land claim. In other words, any clan or family or tribe or kingdom was able to approach the government under the program and say, we used to occupy the land that Simon's grandfather now occupies. But my family doesn't have farms. I'm just using that as an example. Sure. We want that land back. For 19 years, that was done scrupulously. It was done with a fine-toothed comb, John Jacob. The matter has been settled and put to bed. And it was a process that was, although excruciatingly pursued to the very last acre, didn't transfer massive amounts of land, which is why they're now saying there must be a process of expropriation without compensation, because there wasn't that much to repatriate to owners who'd been deprived. It was not the process such as happened in the USA. I don't want to speak out of turn on a subject on which I'm not an expert, but it's well understood, the Trail of Tears, the reservations, this, that, the next thing, blah, blah, blah. In the USA, the process was very much different. Indians' land was to some extent taken, whereas in South Africa, where the whites were such a teeny tiny number of people, it didn't make any sense to go and attack the Zulu Kingdom for its land. What you did was you you found unsettled land and you took that. It's a completely different thing. And that's why, you know, you don't have to believe a terrible, nasty, racist person like Simon Roche. You only have to go and look at the process of recent years. The government process, the African National Congress process, what did they do? How many farms did they buy up from the white owners and give back to the black people who'd been deprived a century ago? It was pitifully small because there was none to be done. So, yeah, I don't know if I've responded well enough, but that's, I think, what I can tell you.
Those are all really, really good points. And one of the arguments is, why don't you go back to Europe? Why don't you go back to France? Why don't you go back to the Netherlands? But, you know, on that note, first of all, like you said, that's your home. That's where for generations upon generations. And to flee to Europe, though, a couple of things. First of all, they're confiscating land from farmers under the auspices of sustainable development, you know, and this Agenda 2030. So there's one issue there. On the social level, Europe has fallen. I mean, they've been completely overran by Islam, and there are no safe places to go to anymore. So for somebody to leave, you know, South Africa and the land of their forefathers to go to Europe is just jumping from one frying pan into another.
Yeah, it would be like coming to the USA. Can you imagine? God forbid it. May God never, ever, ever allow me to move to the USA with my children and have some court tell me, as happened four Fridays ago, that court case was handed down, that I'm not in a position to prevent doctors cutting off the testicles of my five-year-old boy. Heaven forfend. Heaven yes. forfend that I should move to the USA or Europe. Heaven, may God intervene and stop me from doing it.
You know, that's a really good point. And you and I had discussed that at one of our meetings last week when we actually got to sit down together. And that is that, you know, we see violence rising in South Africa, the food trucks being looted, open crime. But we're seeing that in all of our Democrat-ran cities in America today. But it's a unique problem that is unique to the United States and Europe, the West, so you could say Australia and the others, and that you are not confronted with. And this is the aggressive, and I mean militantly aggressive, LGBTQ, trans, two-spirit, and all the other alphabet soup stuff they want to throw in there that is targeting our children and from all directions in the schools, in the libraries, the culture, the social media, where they are, it's a very predatory environment targeting our children, which is not something that you have to contend with in South Africa. Is that correct?
That is correct. It is true that in many ways South Africa is in a parlous state. It's really, things are getting very, very bad. Our post office has recently gone into liquidation. Can you believe that? Our famous, world-famous national airline, South African Airways, was recently sold off by the government for, I think it was 50 US cents. It was 10 rand,
wow,
if I'm not mistaken. Perhaps it was, I don't believe it was 100 rand, but if it was 100 rand, that makes 5 US dollars. Right now, in the headlines of many newspapers in South Africa is an enormous crisis at our seaports. Containers cannot go out or come in.
Right.
Because the African National Congress can run nothing. Right now, today, the blackouts across South Africa extend to about 12 hours a day. The murder rate in South Africa is, across the entire country, is 39 per 100,000 people per year. The murder rate in the USA, for a sense, for some perspective, is 4.88. The last time that I looked, 4.88 per 100,000 per year.
Right.
We now officially have the world's highest unemployment rate. So things are too terrible for words. But But last week, when the USA endeavored to raise debt by selling 30-year treasuries, the week before last, the Chinese and the Japanese politely declined, and the Federal Reserve was compelled to get American banks that didn't want them to buy them at an inflated rate.
Right.
Last week, was it a 7-year treasury, a note that was issued? Again, undersubscribed. And I mentioned this not because it affects any of your listeners, but so that your listeners will appreciate that the rest of the world is now at the point that it's giggling about the U.S.'s debt. The only country that is not staring wide-eyed at America's, it will be by the end of March, just going on $35 trillion. There's only one country in the world that is not staring in great alarm at the debt of the United States of America,
right.
And that is the United States of America.
Right.
There's only one country in the world that is not looking at the institutionalized perversity, not to mention institutionalized insanity, of courts compelling fathers to allow their sons to be emasculated.
Right.
That's the United States of America. The rest of the world looks at that and says, what on earth is going on? Have you people lost your marbles?
Well,
there's only one country that didn't.
Yeah.
You know, when it became clear that the election was stolen, once the evidence was incontrovertible, a controversy couldn't be made out of it, the reaction of the rest of the world was, heavens above, this is madness. The reaction of the USA was to climb in their motor cars and drive around Washington. You were the least perturbed people in the world. I mean, there was the January 6th thing, but that was led by the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Let us
right.
not in that in any conversation concerning the opposition of God-fearing Americans to the notion of the election having been stolen. January the 6th
yes.
must not come into that conversation. That means that the only opposition was guys driving. I drive in a car every day.
Yes.
What was that, driving a motor car around the freeway? Nobody manned the barricades. Nobody went on strike for 100 days. Nobody said this far and no further.
Right.
So there is a level of complacency in the USA that the rest of the world is finding quite astonishing at present. As you know, I speak to many people, John Jacob, and I can't tell you how many people say to me, but on there, Simon. I'm talking about people not just in South Africa, in Sweden, in Norway, in Australia, in New Zealand.
Yes.
Are saying to me, Simon, you're there at the moment. What on earth is going on? And I say to them, I don't know. I can't figure it out. I'm asking everybody under the sun
yes.
to give me a straight answer. What on earth is cooking here? How on earth do you let your leaders incur such a high level of debt that in order to repay only the interest, you have to spend 38% more than you generate in taxes? In other words, this year's budget in the USA is $6.13 trillion. The income was $4.44 trillion. There was a $1.7 trillion shortfall. Excuse me. Which is 38% of $4 trillion.
Yes.
So there's this vicious cycle of just incurring more debt to incur to service debt to incur debt to service debt to incur debt. It is a very, very vicious spiral that the USA is in, and people all over the world are alarmed by it. And if any of your listeners doubt me, well, I refer them once again to the last week and the previous week's debt offerings by the USA. The Chinese refused flatly to buy a dollar. The
yes.
Japanese said, don't look at us. Don't
That's
look,
right.
Don't tell us that you're spending 38% more in your budget than your tax revenue and then ask us to lend you the money, because there's a problem there.
That's this, right.
Something is not right. Anyway, that's my sermon for today, John Jacob. Oh, I apologize.
No, that's you and I discussed this at length, and you know we feel like we are stuck on a runaway train and powerless to do anything about it. You can't reach the locomotive, and we're just taken for a ride because many of the patriots do see what's going on. We are greatly alarmed by it. We have this new Gestapo that's established itself in the United States with a heavy hammer waiting to slam anybody who does even think about looking like they might rise up or think about rising up. And the, as I mentioned in our one of our discussions, we lack leadership. There is no leadership in the United States. And people talk about the founding fathers and the revolution, the war of independence and everything else. We had leadership then. We had leadership of a very high caliber that were organized. They were daring. They were willing to sacrifice their wealth, their lives, their liberty, their fortunes, their sacred honor. And we don't have that today. We don't have the leadership in place. And there are plenty of patriots that hold the sentiment of rising up, but you rise up and you look around and realize you're alone. And everybody else is so comfortable, they've got too much to risk. So there you are rising up, getting slammed, splattered by the heavy hammer, and nobody else is rising up with you. So nobody wants to be the grease spot that is willing to rise up, and fight to take their country back because you're alone. And you can't overcome that without leadership. So here we are in this conundrum. So people now, they're resolved to looking out for themselves, their families, their communities, their groups. And, well, much like the situation in South Africa, there are not enough people to rise up and take the country back to a place that would be livable again. So now you are working on a plan for you to look out for yourselves, because trying to overthrow the system that's oppressing you is not a reality. And I want to talk about that when we come back. We need to take a break here. This segment went, quite long, but I wanted to just let it go because these things Americans need to hear, and this is a very interesting perspective. But when we come back, I want to talk about Sidelanders, the organization, the preparedness, civil defense preparedness organization, something about your plan, lessons, things that could inspire Americans, and lessons learned there, and I'll share some of the plan, how you're organized, your structure, and there's plenty to discuss there. I mean, we could do a 4-hour show. I'm sure we'll be doing plenty more follow-ups, in the coming weeks and months because, it's just a very timely issue. So we are with Simon Roche from Sightlanders. He's in country right now. We're talking about the state of the world and what we can do about it as individual God-fearing patriots. And the Sightlanders plan when we come back. This is the voice of the American Redoubt. Stay right there.
Are you prepared to defend yourself in the dark? A weapon light helps you identify and even deter threats in low light. But it can be difficult to find a secure and comfortable holster. At Works, we design and build holsters for Glock and Sig Sauer pistols with lights. Our precision fit holsters will help you carry with confidence so you're ready to defend yourself day and night.
Go to worksholsters.com. Find your gun and light in our holster finder.
Select your preferred carry style and order your holster today.
Are you prepared for an economic, socio-political collapse in America? Do you wonder how something like that could be possible? What would that even look like? I recommend Glenn Tate's 10-book series titled 299 Days. From a lawyer and government insider's perspective, he lays out a plausible scenario that could very well come about if we continue on the path we're on as a country. Through his fictional character, he lays out his own real-life journey to prepare himself and his family for the possibility of a future full of difficult challenges and what seem like impossible choices. 299 Days is a high-action dystopian novel written from the perspective of the average Joe American and outlines realistic plans and action steps that you could implement to prepare yourself and those around you for the difficult possibilities ahead. Go to 299days.com to learn more.
All right, welcome back, Patriots. This is Radio Free Redoubt, and in this segment, we're continuing on, if you're joining us late, we've got Simon Roche, the international director of Sightlander Affairs and Advocacy. He's in country right now, and it's been since 2017 I had a chance to be with him in person, and just recently, we were able to spend a couple of long sessions together over breaking bread and discussing the state of the world and what's going on in his life. And it's been very interesting. A completely different visit this time around compared to where we were in 2017. How robust and established and active the Patriot community was when he was here in 2017 versus now, it's virtually dead. Aside from the keyboard warriors and the podcasters out there, there's a few sparks happening, but it is not nearly what it used to be. Simon, thank you for being with us here at Radio Free Redoubt.
Thank you very much again for having us, for having Sightlanders on your show, James Jacob. We appreciate it.
Yeah. Now,
John Jacob, I beg your pardon. Yeah. I got you muddled up with the pastor, James Jacob Prush. Sorry, John Jacob.
That's quite all right. It's a mouthful, I know. I noticed that it was something that quite remarkable that you had noticed from your trip in 2017 to today's this latest tour that you're on, doing a lot of interviews and presentations and talking to a lot of folks. The entire environment in the United States has shifted.
The right wing, and I use the term advisedly, as the French used it at the time of the revolution, on the right-hand side of the parliament were the Christians, the monarchists and so on, and on the left-hand side were the humanists, the socialists, and so on.
Yes.
The right wing of the USA has been atomized. Absolutely pulverized. When we toured here in 2017, I did two or three radio interviews, and I did two small presentations that had been arranged in advance. And word spread, and I had people calling me from all over the United States to come and give presentations, and I ended up remaining here. Originally, the tickets were booked for, I think, 3 weeks, if I'm not mistaken. They were extended to 6 weeks and then 3 months. And eventually I left here after 6 months. And if I had stayed for a year, if I was completely exhausted, but if I had been able to stay for a year, that year would have been full. Day after day after day, people were ringing me up, sending me emails, text messages, WhatsApp messages. Please come to Cascadia, come to North Dakota, come to Texas, come to Florida, over and over and over.
Yeah.
And now I've received precious few invitations, maybe four in total. So people have been cowed. They've been terrified into hiding. I think that's the explanation. I don't think there's any debate or conversation to be held. I've spoken to enough people to endeavor to understand this problem for my tour. Why is my tour struggling so much? And I get the same answer over and over and over again. In fact, the two people who paid Americans said, look, if you'll come out to the USA again, we'll buy your tickets. Those two guys, quite separately, I know them very separately from one another, forewarned me about this. The one guy said, listen, I'm going to buy you a ticket. I want you to come out here. I'm dying to see you. I want to spend time with you. He said, but just know one thing, Simon, the landscape has changed completely. You will be lucky if you get any appointments to speak to anybody. The right wing has been destroyed, and they've run for cover. He said, so much so that even many podcasters have shut their podcasts down. So it's not only groups that are afraid to exist,
yes,
to physically be physically manifest, but even in the virtual realm, you know, people just talking over the digital airwaves. He said, many of those people are too afraid to work. I said to him, Andrew, don't you worry about it. Oh, I'll be okay. I'll find lots of appointments. I know I will. I always do. It'll be easy. Stop right. worrying so much. And he said to me, all right, if you think you know better, it's in your hands. Lo and behold, he, and as I say, the other guy who bought the tickets with him, turned out to be right, and I was completely wrong. There's nothing left of what there was 6 years ago. Nothing.
I think the term atomized is probably the best description. And, you know, leading up to the election in 2016, everybody fully expected Hillary would be president, and they're going to drop the hammer on the conservatives, and it's going to be a full on assault against, you know, conservative Christian America. And you saw this galvanization happening. And I think what happened when Trump got in, well, it's what we call the Trump slump. Everybody just took their foot off the gas. We're good. Our country's reviving. He's slashed thousands and thousands of regulations on day one. He's getting us out of the Paris Accords. Our country is now back on track. Everything's great. And then the coup. So I think that during Trump's administration, I think a lot of the patriots just kind of, they went to sleep. They said, oh, it's not as bad. Hillary didn't get in. America is saved. And I think that you saw it's kind of a disintegration out of necessity. It's no longer necessary for the patriots to come together like we were thinking we needed to. And then once the coup took place in 2020, there's a remnant of the patriot community trying to scramble to respond. And of course, and we saw the response now, and how, you know, we often refer to the FBI now as the new Gestapo. It used to be a kind of a general rule of thumb that of every 17 patriots gathered for a patriot type of an event, a meeting, any type of organization, let's say a militia or some political action group, 1 in 17 is an agent or an informant. And now I suspect that to be much higher. They've placed a great deal of emphasis on infiltrating, you know, the conservative right wing biggest terror threat that we face is, you know, conservative Christian patriots. And how to recover, once again, it would require leadership that I don't see out there right now. So we're back to now, everybody's taking care of their, now it's about taking care of yourself, your family, your community, your group of tight-knit people that you've built trust with, and protecting yourself from everybody that doesn't belong in that inner circle of trust. And that's sadly where we've, it has to be satanic, because I don't even know if any of the brightest minds on the left could have orchestrated this any better.
Yeah, I don't know to what extent it's a spiritual thing, but I wouldn't be surprised. Nothing would surprise me anymore. Yeah. You know, during the pandemic, they did global surveys of I suppose, everything that opened and shut, because that was one of the greatest experiments in the history of the world. And two of the surveys measured resistance to the forthcoming clot shot.
Yes.
And both of them revealed that the highest resistance in the world by very, very far was among white South Africans.
Yes.
And I suppose we're fortunate in many ways, and pride cometh before a fall. I don't mean to brag, because the Lord will hold me accountable for it, but we were astonished to see how the rest of Christendom capitulated.
Yes.
The other English-speaking Western countries, Canada, the United States of America, Western Europe, well, I suppose that's not just English-speaking, but Western and Central Europe, Australia and New Zealand are the peoples with whom we compare ourselves, because we come from Western and Central Europe.
Right.
And we play rugby against Australia and New Zealand. And when we emigrate, we invariably emigrate, if not to Australia, to Canada. And the USA is the hegemon of the the English-speaking Western countries of the world. So
right.
That's who we look to.
Yes.
And we were looking at all of those countries capitulating to the narrative that there was a bat in a fish market, and somebody, obviously, this is now implicitly, somebody went and bought the world's longest swimming pool net to fish the bat out of the roof.
Right.
He slaughtered and dressed the bat. And anybody who knows anything about bats knows that I'm not exaggerating when I say that he then put the 1/2 of an ounce of meat on display next to the haddock and the salmon and the whitefish. And somebody bought it. And then a whole lot of people got sick, but they could never find the first 12 patients, patients 0 through 11. But it's definitely known for sure that it was a bat in a fish market, which just happens to be 4 blocks down the road from
Wuhan,
from China's only P4 laboratory.
Right.
And that stuff, what I'm saying now, is not said with the benefit of hindsight. That stuff, we knew in the first few weeks of the pandemic.
Yes.
And my point is just that we look at the world and we think, what happened to them? These are Australians. Australians.
Right.
Rugby and cricket, simultaneous world champions.
Yes.
They, you know, in our sphere, we used to regard Australia as arguably the world's greatest sporting country. Not very big, but, you know, for size the best. What happened to these people?
Yes.
The New Zealanders, what happened to them? What happened to the Americans? And I think, now that I've given that very long parable, I think that some terror has crept into the souls of our people, because we are being ridden roughshod over in ways that our forefathers never would have tolerated, John Jacob.
Yes.
Our forefathers went to war at the drop of a hat. And when they saw that the enemy was 100,000 and they were only 3,000, they gave their wife a final kiss goodbye on the cheek and climbed back into the rank and file.
Yep.
To die.
Right.
You know, nobody emigrated.
Yeah, you know,
nobody ran away. Nobody did it. You
right.
just, you stood your ground like a man.
Yes.
And you died for what you believed in.
Yes.
If it was two words, I mean, filioque procedit. Filioque procedit, two words.
Yes.
In the Nicene Creed. Two words. Doesn't matter. I'll die for them. Two
right.
words, it's more than enough. I'll stand and fight and die for what I believe in. Now, there are rumors coming out that there's all sorts of bad stuff in the vaccine. Oh, well, that's just too bad, because my boss really wants me to get it. So
yes.
I think I become...
We saw the same thing. And I can say that Lady Liberty and I didn't wear a mask one time, not once, through all of that. And Also, the clot shot. We saw that coming a mile off, and we were astounded at the numbers in the Patriot Christian Patriot community of people who capitulated to that, to one or two or three of those shots. We personally know people who have died from it, and mm-hmm. I can't believe the number of people that voluntarily wore the slave masks so that they could go about their business. I mean, it's sad to see a defeated America of all places, you know, and
well, that's the thing.
And to be a minority among the Patriots who wouldn't bend at all through any of it. So it was disheartening to see the amount of capitulation that took place. Like, oh, it's just a mask, or, you know, it's just a, it's, you know, FDA emergency approved. The government wouldn't allow anything that would, you know, harm us. And so, yeah, this is pretty wild. But let's talk about Sidelanders and the emergency civil defense plan. So just, and I'll let you take off from here, but from what I understand of it, and I've read quite a bit about it, this is a plan based on a scaled up response depending on the level. You know, if this is isolated to built up city areas, or if it's nationwide, it would determine, you know, what responses that the organization would take. But this is a bug out plan to get to a safe area, a redoubt, a defensible, safe place that, you know, several hundred thousand people can move to provide for common defense, security, support, and so on. So can you speak to that Sightlanders plan?
Yes, it's really quite simple. We have two scenarios, if you like. The one is called the now, and the other is the then. In the now, we prepare for the then. Our organization in the now is composed of 10 families makes a group. This is theoretical. It's not always practical.
Right.
Feasible, viable. But in theory, it's our organization is made up of small groups. And a group is composed of 10 or comprised of 10 families. 10 groups make up a region. 10 regions make up a province. And we have 35 Sightlanders provinces. Don't do the maths because it's misleading. That is the theoretical structure. Obviously,
right.
in some small towns, only 3 families may compose the group of that particular town.
Right.
And so on. Right. Those small groups are meant to be able to flee at the drop of a hat should it happen that our leadership declares the national emergency plan. So should it happen that there's widespread anarchy across South Africa and it appears to be worsening and people's lives are in danger and we believe that the right thing to do is now to evacuate, then the entire body of Sightlanders members across the length and the breadth of South Africa would flee through a series of convoys and camps.
Okay.
To a location in the central desert region of South Africa, which we have identified as our forthcoming safe area. And from there, we will erect the national emergency plan. So clearly there's been a transition period. I was describing to you the now and how the groups are composed. And obviously if a national emergency is declared, then there's this kind of transition out of those small groups to a safe area. And then begins, the then. We are divided up into 17 departments. John Jacob, I've got a very strong echo in my ear. It's gone now.
Oh.
17 departments that shall take care of all of the many necessities of erecting a national emergency plan. So we have an electricity department, a sanitation department, a clean water department, logistics, communications, and so on and so forth. We're very active. To give you some idea, I was at a meeting of some very good American people recently in the South, very good people, and they were chatting about whether they should, whether this organization should begin to hold the occasional Zoom meeting, whether it would work. And I didn't say anything, but I was sorely tempted to say that we hold probably, or I could be exaggerating, maybe 20 Zoom meetings a month. In other words, continually on an ongoing basis, our various departments and regions and groups and leadership structures and membership structures are engaging furiously to implement things, to plan things, to arrange things, to ensure that decisions are being adhered to consult, to discuss. And I speak to you as somebody who hates meetings. I can't bear them. Yeah. These are not meetings. These are not meetings for the sake of meetings. These are meetings for the sake of getting things done.
Right.
We're very active, very vibrant, which is not to say that we're completely ready for a civil war. I don't think anybody is. And I think if a civil war broke out in South Africa tomorrow, we would learn the very hard way just how harsh a civil war can be.
Yes.
And I think that I'm very, it's terrible to say it, but many of us, may God forbid, it would die. So I'm not suggesting that we're the bee's knees and that we've got all bases covered and that we're just about perfect and everybody should be looking to us. All I'm saying is that we are vibrant and we are thriving and we are industriously preparing to implement what we call our national emergency plan.
Yeah. Well, you have a very real threat looming over you. And so that creates that impetus. And you're fully aware of it. You're reminded of it. Your adversaries are making sure to remind you of the threat that you face. So that's it's a fascinating endeavor. And anybody can go to your website. We'll throw that out here in just a little bit, where they can start learning more about Sightlanders. And you know, there are lessons that can be learned and gleaned that could apply to families anywhere in the world that are looking at danger on the horizon and want to prepare for it. So, and you've made yourself very accessible to people that want to ask questions and try to put something similar together for their region or their group, their state. And now let's talk about your training. How often do you conduct exercises? Sightlanders, is that done on a local level or are there national scheduled exercises?
It varies, Don Jacob. Certain departments conduct exercises more frequently than others. For example, our communications department, which is centered mostly around radio, there is some satellite stuff and you know, various other media, if you like, but it's mostly radio, conducts exercises. Dear me, I don't want to tell a lie, but goodness gracious, in some areas, I know for a fact that it's nightly, yeah. Daily. On a national basis, probably monthly. We're going to conduct a huge exercise in the Easter week, the last week of March.
Okay.
That's going to be filmed internationally, incidentally. Some people wanted to film some stuff. And so we invited them to cover that that great big exercise. We do exercises all the time, John Jacob. I can't put a number on it because we have various departments, various provinces. But it's just ongoing. It's
right.
Just a thing that happens all of the time.
Understood. Well, we'll make sure to follow up with you on that March exercise as it gets closer. You know, it might be a good thing for us to put together an AMRON exercise, you know, during that same time kind of, you know, tag along with that type of, we do our big annual exercise every year at the end of July, but we are looking for opportunities to do more like quarterly or, you know, biannual exercises. So I'll follow up with you on that. But I wanted to ask you too, and I got to let you go, but we've seen a lot of breakdown in certain regions in South Africa, those of us who follow that, including riots where there's a lot of violence. Has any portion of Sightlanders activated in response to a real world societal breakdown, even if just temporary? Have you activated certain groups in certain cities or areas where they had to implement the emergency plan?
I would rather not comment, if you don't mind.
Okay, not a problem. Understood. So this facility, it's not a facility, it's a region where you are, all of Sightlanders, if this is a nationwide breakdown, would use as your destination where you'd set up an enclave, essentially, with all of your services, all of the logistics, security, and everything. That's the ultimate plan, correct?
Yes, with a defensible perimeter. Under international law, you have certain protections as long as you remain a non-party to a conflict.
Right.
And you lose some of those protections. Obviously, if you're a party to the conflict, let's say you were a Ukrainian soldier or army now, there's certain things that the Russians shouldn't do to you because it's just too bad, you know, like chlorine gas, mustard gas, or
right,
whatever. But if you're a non-party, you have very, very much more protection by international law. So our intention is to remove ourselves from a conflict, become a non-party to that conflict, then under international law, erect a defensible perimeter and make certain declarations under international law. So we have a strong defensibility division, if you like.
Yes.
I don't want to call it an army because it's not an army, and it just leads to unnecessary manipulation of one's words.
Right. So a security element.
Yeah, we have a security element that is very strong, very capable, very highly trained, and very highly experienced. And they will effect that part of the emergency plan. So I just wanted to throw it in there that we do have that aspect. I didn't mention it earlier.
Right. Okay. Well, there's plenty to whet the appetite of the listeners so they can go and learn more. It's a fascinating endeavor. The whole thing is just, well, a lot of people have learned lessons from it, have studied, followed it. And I just want to, you know, encourage you guys. Just God bless you for what you're doing. Some great work, and you know, we'll see what type of collaboration we can work out, you know, in the future, as far as you know, what we can learn from each other. So thank you once again. Now, would you mind putting out all of the information, where people can go to learn more, your website, if folks want to contact you directly and they have questions, maybe their own group or organization that they could maybe use some help with, go ahead and put that out.
Yes, we love to help, as you know, and we have a very, very high opinion of the American Redoubt and the people in the American Redoubt, the people who listen to this podcast. My American number, up until the 17th, I will depart the USA on the 17th of December, is 838-839-5089. My email address is Simon, S-I-M-O-N, at sightlanders.org, S-U-I-D-L-A-N-D-E-R-S.org. landers.org. And if you send me an email, I can always give you my South African telephone number if I'm already back home, and we can chat by WhatsApp or text message or WhatsApp call is free all across the world. And we'd love to hear from good American patriots.
Outstanding. Okay, so one more time, I want to make sure I got that number correctly. It's 838-839-5089.
That's it.
Okay, good. All right. Well, thank you for that. And the website that people can go to learn more?
Saitlanders.org. So just as my email address is simon@saitlanders.org, so our website is saitlanders.org. You don't have to type in anything else, no HTTPS, no www, just saitlanders.org will take you right to our English language website.
Outstanding. All right, we've got it down, and we'll put those notes up on posting at Radio Free Redoubt, so folks can just click on through to that and or copy and paste it, and they'll have access to it nonetheless. So, Simon Roche, it's been a pleasure. It's always great to talk to you, and we could talk for hours and hours. This interview went twice as long as what we were planning, but it's really great perspectives, good information, and we really just scratched the surface. But thank you for being with us.
Thank you very much for having me, John Jacob, and if you ever want us on again to discuss some more of how our national emergency plan works or anything like that, it would be our pleasure to be on your show. You don't have to ask us twice.
Well, we can look forward to that, because there are a lot of things to discuss and a lot of lessons learned, and you guys are doing this regularly. I'm not talking about it, doing it. So thank you once again. Simon Roche from Saitlanders, God bless you and your journeys, and I look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thank you, John Jacob. Good night, and God bless you.
You as well.